Episode 84, Using Technology to Grow a Family Law Practice, my conversation with Jason Rice of Durango Divorce. Jason is a family law attorney based in Maine and New England who has harnessed technology to manage his legal practice. Jason has a deep passion for family law, one that has been fostered through his years of legal experience. Jason has worked as a staff attorney for the 13th Judicial Circuit in Tampa, Florida, where he assisted judges in a variety of areas, including family law. He taught family law at a community college for nearly 10 years. And Jason has co-authored Relocations, A Judge's Perspective with the Honorable Judge Daniel Sleet. Join Jason and me as we discuss how to use technology to help improve his services to his clients. Enjoy. Have you been enjoying the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast? Consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast feeds. Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
I appreciate you being here. And to get things started, please tell us what your current tech setup is.
Yeah, so I am a Mac user. I love Apple. So I run my law firm essentially from my MacBook Pro that I have and use my Apple iPhone. And I would use Apple printers if I could, if they existed. But if they do, please let me know.
So what printer do you use?
I use a Canon laser printer. So I find that kind of, for my purposes, I like a clean look. I don't have to bother with kind of the inkjets, high capacity. So it makes it easy. I can scan documents in, and I might be able to touch on that a little bit later about different thoughts on how I can scan a little bit better.
And so does the scanner, is that part of your printer or is that separate?
That's part of the laser printer. And I just, you know, kind of input it and go through that. That's kind of how I've done it for the last, you know, 10 years of practice.
So all right.
Well, to me, but I have been using my iPhone as a scanner to upload directly into my case files.
Okay, cool.
And so that's kind of connected to Clio. And so that I would like to go paperless if possible. And I think that's a dream of a lot of law firms. But unfortunately, right now here in Maine, we still got to send a lot of paper. So almost there, but not quite.
So does your scanner have an ADF, an automatic document feeder?
It does. Yep.
Okay. And does your printer print on both sides?
It does two-sided copies if I need to.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I've been using my printer less and less over the years.
That's what I like to, you know, I can run my practice almost entirely from my laptop, and I'd like to be able to get to that point. Still kind of tied to that cord a little bit with the printer.
So yeah, it's funny because like I'm using my printer less and less over time.
Right.
And I can't think of the last time I bought a box of paper from Staples or Amazon.com. And for your printer ink, where do you get it?
So I only had purchased my first toner refill, and I did it through Amazon. It was kind of a generic brand, but I guess as kind of a, I haven't had to use it as much as I thought I was going to have to use it.
Right, right.
I just literally just finished off the first box of paper that I bought in June of last year.
Well, what about your printer ink?
Yep. And I bought that, I'd say maybe 2 months ago, the replacement toner.
Right, right.
I think it came with a smaller capacity.
Right.
But so far, so good. So I guess, you know, in hindsight, I am using a little bit less than I anticipated, which is great.
Check out Inkjet Superstore. They sell new and refurbished toner cartridges for usually at a good discount.
Okay.
And that's where I've been getting it for like 17 years.
Well, that'd be great.
I have a LaserJet M507 that's been, you know, working well for about 5 or 7 years. And, you know, knock on wood, these things don't need to be replaced that often.
No, yeah, I mean, I'm happy with the performance. Like I think I mentioned, it's a Canon image class laser printer. So it's done really well.
And which iPhone do you have?
I have iPhone 14, I believe. I think I purchased it right before I opened my own practice to make sure that way it's just kind of a work dedicated iPhone. I got the larger size, the plus size model. I did hit over 40 now and things started getting a little bit smaller to read.
Yeah, I know that problem as I'm over 50 and things are getting even harder to read. But, you know, in settings, you can change the text size.
I did find that, yeah. And it's helpful.
That is very helpful. And did you know that Apple has a business section that
really?
You can become basically it's like a business membership that you can join for free. And it gives you sort of that white glove on top of white glove treatment. And you can build over time little discounts, but, you know, granted they're not huge, but a little discount on a large purchase or an expensive purchase can still, you know, every little bit helps.
Sure.
But also, you know, they have a leasing program.
Is that strictly for business members or is that a kind of a...
You know, I'm not sure. I think I started leasing computers from them before I became a business member. but I could be wrong. But, you know, to join the business program, I think is free and, you know, can't hurt either way. And then on top of that, I asked them about the leasing. I was leasing my last two computers. And then when I got the Mac Studio with the M1 Ultra chip, I decided just to buy it outright because I'm using it for both the blog and for the firm.
Okay. And for my edification on that side would be,
sure,
in the leasing program, do you lease it for a term and then kind of upgrade to the next model? And do they help you with transferring everything from, I'm assuming, like iCloud and whatnot? But
yeah, they can help you, but also it's fairly seamless, with their transfer program, or if you have things like stored, you know, in the cloud, like Dropbox or Box. And of course, with Clio, that's always in sync, as long as you got your internet connection. So that should be an easy setup. But they have a migration program, and I'll be sure to put that in the show notes, that basically will migrate your settings and your software and your hard drive from one computer to another.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'll take a look. Definitely take a look into that.
And is your MacBook Pro, does that have a Silicon chip or is it Intel?
Silicon chip.
Okay. Well, do you know which one you have?
I don't.
M1, M2, M3?
M1.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
They're solid chips. They're going to last a long time, I think. And lastly, if I may, check out macrumors.com.
Okay.
And they're really good about the buying cycle on the different Apple products. So kind of gives you an idea of when you shouldn't buy, you know, when it's in the middle of a cycle.
Okay, got a heads up.
Yeah. And so like, if you're thinking like, well, should I, you know, buy something right now or lease something right now? And like to say, well, something imminent's coming out soon, you know, hold off a little bit versus like, you know, something just came out or you're just mid-cycle and you should be fine.
Yeah, I've been impressed with the performance. Obviously, in my personal realm, I've kind of always kind of used Apple as a preference in my work. When I worked for law firms, it was always strictly, you know, Dell, or well, I guess usually just strictly Dell. I think I've only used in law firms, but inevitably there were some issues that would pop up and, you know, they'd have to be replaced. But so far, this has been quite the workhorse.
How was your transition from moving from Windows to Apple?
When I was using the Windows-based computers, it was strictly, you know, accessing really the internet and you know, the billing software and Microsoft Office kind of suites. I still use Microsoft Office, obviously, like Word and, you know, SharePoint and things like that, and Microsoft, you know, Outlook for my email to try to keep that continuity that I was a little bit familiar with. But I really haven't seen any, it wasn't a big shift or some type of big transition for me. It was pretty kind of seamless because of the practice software that I was using, very comparable to what I'm using now, which is Clio.
It's interesting because a lot of attorneys are hesitant to move from Windows to Mac, you know, yet they'll have like an iPhone or an iPad, yet don't want to move to a Mac because of the GUI, the graphical user interface. They're like, this is too different. This is too foreign. And it's really not that much different. It's, you know, it's all Windows based. It's all point and click. And you just got to figure out where certain things are versus where things used to be. It's not that big of a deal.
And it's very intuitive too, the way Apple, you know, their interface is very intuitive, in my opinion, when you say, I wonder if I can do this, and you can do it. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, as opposed to Windows, sometimes it was like, where the heck do they hide this? How do I do this?
And there's really some great communities out there, you know, to learn how to use Apple products. And also on top of that, for lawyers who use Apple products. And I could probably name several individuals. Actually, one is, if I remember correctly, it's In the Know with Brett Burney and Jeff Richardson. Okay. They do a podcast basically on Apple and news in Apple and sort of how lawyers would be interested in something like that. They're both lawyers. And I think Brett will be at the ABA Tech Show, the 2024 Tech Show this year. Actually, he's going to do a presentation on how to use TrialPad for trials.
That'd be great.
And he's a good guy. And so is Jeff. I just don't think he's going to be at the conference. And hopefully I'll see you there.
No, that'd be great. That's one, like I think I mentioned to you before, it's one of my kind of bucket list, you know, ton of to-dos, just trying to stay in the tech. And I think it's going to be even more relevant now. I mean, obviously, you're probably different time, different show would be, you know, the use of artificial intelligence in the practice of law.
I believe that's going to be a big, big topic actually, I was writing a blog post about that and the AI, how it's being utilized and also the ethics involved.
Right. And there's a lot of unknowns, a little bit on that front, obviously. Yeah. And the big headline is the case that was the motion, I think, was used and filed with the court that had some case law. So I think that's obviously a red flag, but I think it's going to allow an opportunity to, you know, to help facilitate a little bit and kind of speed up things as a smaller stuff or, you know, even kind of bigger things can be used, you know, completed by AI. But yeah, I'd be interested to see, want to stay on top of how that all kind of develops.
By the way, that court case was in the Southern District of New York where an attorney had ChatGPT draft out a motion And the judge and opposing counsel are like, well, we can't find these cases. And instead of going back to double check the cases, the lawyer just asked ChatGPT, are you making this stuff up? And it said, no, of course not. And
so much for shepherdizing, right?
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I think you and I are both of the same era where we actually had to learn how to do shepherdization by books.
Yep.
They don't teach that anymore.
I had taught legal research and writing to paralegals in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had the Westlaw programming and all that kind of stuff. And I would show them the shepherdized function, which may or may not be Lexis exclusive. I can't remember now. I think
I believe it is.
And I would tell them, like, this is actually a set of books that we had to use and go to called Shepherds. So, and we made a verb out of it.
Pardon the interruption. I hope you're enjoying the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast as much as I enjoy making them. Consider buying us a cup of coffee or two to help defray some of the production costs. Thanks and enjoy. Well, let's get into the questions. Question one, what are three pieces of tech, software, or hardware that solos and small firms might be surprised are not, quote, big firm only?
I would say, I mean, one of the big ones for me is kind of the practice management software. So I use Clio, and that has allowed me, I mean, to me, that's probably 90% of my ability to run my practice is because of what Clio offers and what I can do with it. It's very intuitive and it's got a lot of integrations with other apps. Can't remember what their account's at, but it's extremely high. And so, I mean, that's allowed me, it does invoicing. It obviously, I keep my notes in there. I can, you know, my billing and things like that. And so the calendar, my firm calendar's in there and it syncs seamlessly with Outlook. And Calendly is another accounting system that I use. That would be one of my bigger ones as well, kind of using that as scheduling for clients. That's an option that they have if they can go on my website and just schedule using Calendly.
I love Calendly. I use Calendly too. I used to use something else and then I moved to Calendly. And it just saves so much time of going back and forth between emails of, you know, hey, I can talk here. No, I can't talk there. How about this day? And, you know, also right. It takes you out of the equation.
Exactly. I'm not involved in that kind of, you know, right. It takes me out. So it's great.
And I know Calendly syncs nicely with Clio too.
And then recently I check it, you know, probably at least once a week, my settings, everything, just making sure my kind of presets are there. And I was able to integrate it with Zoom, my Zoom account. So One of the options, obviously, for consultations is, you know, it's phone, in person, or by Zoom. And now they can schedule that when they do that and ask for Zoom, it automatically schedules a Zoom meeting using a Zoom link, which is great.
Yeah, I have yet to do Zoom initial consultations. You know, the market I handle is mostly veterans and military members, and they've been all quite comfortable with just doing it by phone. It's been one or two that's been a little bit, you know, hey, I'd rather meet you in person, and, you know, we can possibly adjust for that. All right, so you got the legal practice management, and I think you had Calendly. What would be your third answer?
I would say, so it's Posh. So it's kind of a service, but it's obviously, I have an app that I can use and it integrates with Calendly as well. So they can access, I give them access to Calendly so they can schedule things. But that's a...
What's Posh?
So Posh is an answering service based out of Virginia.
Okay.
And they have the ability to set up intakes. I can turn on and off using the app if I'm available. So if I'm in a court hearing or if I'm with a client, I can, you know, turn it off to say I can't accept calls at this time.
All right.
But it keeps a nice log. You can ask them to call clients back or different individuals if you need them to, but they keep the notes right in there in the app. So it's freed me up from, you know, initially every call that came in, I was obviously, it's either going to be a client or a potential client. And I didn't want to miss any of those calls, but they take them 24/7 if necessary.
Okay. So,
and I think that has helped level kind of the playing field a little bit. Other big firms, at this point in time, I don't hire somebody to sit and man phones, but I have an answering service at my fingertips. And so I think that's been a tremendous lifesaver for me.
But is this really a hardware or software, or is this just a more of a non-tech solution? Because it sounds like it's a virtual receptionist. You know, I think I use, actually, I kind of forgot how I use. I think I use Ruby receptionists. And, you know, they come in great and, you know, they have access to my calendar too, as you've mentioned, which kind of goes back to, you know, having, you know, a good calendaring system like through Clio or through whatever it is that you're using. There's like Clio, Smokeball. I use Daylight through Market Circle. Actually, Daylight is a Mac-based software created on a Mac for a Mac and can only be used on a Mac. And the difference between, say, what I use versus what you use with the cloud-based is that mine is housed on my computer.
Okay.
It is synced to other computers through Market Circle, the creator of Daylight, but it integrates nicely with my Mac Mail.
Well, that'd be great.
So every email I send out from my Mac Mail, I can tag it into Daylight. So that email, like if I call up either the particular project or client or particular person, all of those emails will pop up as long as I've tagged accordingly. And the same thing is I can also add tasks and projects, you know, by through the DMA, the Daylight Mail Assistant, or even directly through Daylight. And it's we talk about like the GUI of what you're comfortable with and what you're not comfortable with. And it's just, since it's so natively Mac, I'm very comfortable with it. And cloud computing in general, when it comes to having your legal practice management programs of any of them, and I'm not pinpointing one versus the other, but any of them has me a little bit concerned because it's on the cloud, which is fine, but it's based on the cloud, not on your computer. So what happens when you don't have internet? That's my biggest concern. So if I'm on an airplane, you know, I presume that before I got in the airplane that my Daylight has been recently synced so that I have the most up-to-date stuff. But if I don't have good Wi-Fi, let alone secure Wi-Fi on that plane or at a hotel, or, you know, if the power goes out, that can create some problems. And so that's been my hesitation to move to, you know, a cloud-based LPM. I was recently ClioCon 2023 reporting from there, and they have some great stuff. And they're really on top of AI and, you know, doing integrations and making everything seamless. And I think they like to call it the source of truth. And I think all of these LPMs, these cloud-based LPMs are going to be, you know, have some great advantages, especially when it comes to AI, because the AI that they're baking into their programs really can only be housed in the cloud. But right. I still want a hard copy of what I'm currently working on my computer and not through some sort of web portal.
Having it accessible, right? You know, right. Without being dependent on the cloud.
Right.
Do you think I think the concerns could be, I guess, non-practice specific, but is it also, do you think potentially, given your area of practice, or it might be practice specific, having that cloud-based versus non-cloud-based is an option?
You think that my concern is practice specific? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it is, but I mean, I'm just trying.
I don't think so. I don't think so. And actually, what I thought you were to go was, well, what happens if your computer is fried? Well, you have a backup. I have a backup on Market Circle's cloud, but I also have several other backups, you know, through Dropbox, Backblaze, Time Machine, so I have several other backups, you know, the whole 3-2-1, one source, two different locations, three different backups, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does. Completely.
But I still want to pull one more piece of software from you.
Yep. So one thing, so I guess the other thing that I've been using has been Kofax PDF, Nuance Power PDF. So I do family law. We have a lot of discovery, a lot of documents, being able to either use OCR or, you know, getting it all in one spot, be able to manipulate the PDFs and by that, you know, putting bait stamps on it or putting exhibit stickers on them and compressing them. I have found that's been immensely useful. I just prepared for a trial this past week and, you know, it was easy clicks, easy, you know, it was very intuitive. In the past at law firms, we used Adobe, but this one, you know, Nuance Power PDF, I really enjoyed and find it extremely easy to use. And it's allowed me to kind of continue with how I prepare cases and discovery responses by using, you know, inserting the bait stamps and stickers where necessary. So to me, that's been, and family law is a lot of paperwork in the beginning, obviously the divorce documents and whatnot, but second biggest component would be the discovery. And how do you manage the incoming discovery? And where do you put that? And, you know, I like to bait stamp things. We're not using the traditional handheld bait stamp. So, you know, kind of the 21st century version.
Well, you know, so you talk about reading a lot of PDFs. That being said, I should have asked you, do you have any external monitors?
I do. I've been using my iPad as an external monitor. Yep. So I can kind of move, swing things over a little bit. I've also been able to, obviously, I can use my iPad with a keyboard as a kind of a impromptu, you know, kind of a working man or poor man's laptop for, you know, if I'm traveling or short, you know, spans where I don't want to lug my computer. I can still access my cases. I can still type and everything like that. So but I really like the feature of me being able to use my iPad as a second monitor.
I've got two 27-inch LGs flanking me left and right. And then for the blog, I splurged for the Apple XDR monitor, the 6K.
Right. It's nice.
Oh, yeah. It's really nice. I'm really enjoying that. You look great on this, by the way.
Oh, that's good.
But another thing you sort of mentioned was Kofax. I'm assuming that's sort of like an e-faxing software.
Yeah, that's the name of it's the Power PDF. I think so.
Okay.
Kind of changed it. I do also use HumbleFax, but I just... in my practice, really, there's not a lot of faxing going on, but it's a, you know, completely, I can send it through email and receive faxes through email. So I did get that just in case I need to do faxes. And I've only done maybe two faxes since opening up my practice. Fortunately, you know, a lot of people can just send it through, you know, PDF documents or whatnot through email.
Do you use a portal to send the fax, or do you sort of send like an email fax?
It's an email fax. Yeah. And like I said, it's called Humble Fax as the provider.
I'm currently using eFax, and it's what I've been using for 17 years. I need to see, like, maybe check the current competition, see how the rates are going. But it's so nice to have those faxes that you send and get the receipts in your email and in, of course, your client relations management programs that you can easily tag into there just to make sure that you're on track of everything.
Right, right.
Well, let's move on to question number two. What three pieces of tech, software, hardware do you use to make working with virtual remote services seamless?
So I would say, I mean, I've mentioned I obviously use my, you know, MacBook as my, I run my practice out of that. My iPhone, like I said, I can connect with my virtual answering service.
Now, does your iPhone, is that your working office number?
So I use Google Voice as that law firm number. So it all gets, you know, goes there, and then I have it routed to, so my answering service can pick it up, or I can pick it up directly on my iPhone, answer it through the Google Voice app. And that way, obviously, it's not giving out my own personal cell phone number, but I can also calls are coming in and coming out in the event that my answering service doesn't catch it. And it does, you know, obviously allows text messages. And that, you know, I can't try to limit it to situations with clients where it's, I'm out the courthouse, outside of the courtroom, things like that. I've nothing meaningful, I would say, in the text conversations, because to me, it's a little bit limiting. And I want to make sure my communications with the clients are captured in email or, you know, phone call with them.
Gotcha. And so, you know, it's funny, I kind of had to turn off my VoIP app because I was getting too much spam and crap calls. Yeah. And I know you've been in business for, I think, less than a year now or 2 years.
Yep. So I'm actually probably hitting 7 months now. So yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. I think next month I hit 18 years.
You're a little ahead of me.
And well, I say that not like as a, you know, I'm not trying to brag or anything. Yeah. It's just that I think my phone number has been out there long enough that I just seem to be on certain lists every now and then. And it's like, it's one of the reasons why I got a virtual receptionist years ago is because I just can't keep answering the phone for, you know, these spam calls, which are just always, always a lot of fun.
Right. So, no, for sure.
So what do you use your laptop for to help with your virtual remote services?
Yes, I can kind of hone in a little bit on that, on the question. So are you referring to like Clio, accessing my practice management, or?
Well, I think more with regards to communications. So, you know, we sort of talked about Clio in the first answer, and, you know, you have your law practice management program. And of course, I guess we could maybe discuss how by having something like Clio allows you to add and remove seats, you know, pretty easily.
Right.
And also that, you know, getting set up is easy enough because all I got to do is log in and there they are. And forgive me, hopefully I'm not like answering the question for you. Can you talk a little bit along those lines, perhaps either Clio or any other software?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Clio cloud-based, I can access that going to the website. So I use Manage and Clio Grow. I also have the app on my phone and my iPad. The app allows me where I'm, you know, if I have my iPhone, I can pull up the client files and contact information. I can upload documents directly to the file by scanning it or taking a picture through using the iPhone, which is helpful if I'm in court, we get a decision like from the court right away or whatever it might be, or a draft judgment through negotiating and mediation. I can save copies of what the, you know, the parties have agreed to or whatever court document simply just by, you know, scanning it using my phone. I can keep track of time using my phone and kind of entries like that. I can communicate. Clio also has a text option and a portal option. So my clients, I always recommend they also get the Clio for Clients app,
which allows
them to scan files and documents using their phone, and it goes right to their case file, which is extremely helpful because in family law, there's a lot of documents you need to get from them in the beginning. And that allows them to kind of, you know, simply pointing and clicking certain things to get that information to me, as opposed to having to come to my office and kind of go the old fashioned way, but can do it quickly.
If I may ask, have you ever had a problem where perhaps the client was being maybe excessive or abusive with the use of an app like that?
No, so far, if anything, I would say that maybe it's not used enough. Some people are still kind of getting used to scanning documents. But I mean, maybe you've had one or two clients in the past who've, you know, I guess what they haven't honed in on is the ability to kind of scan one a complete document versus each page individually. So I'll get like the five pages individual as opposed to one one complete scan. But so far, I haven't had anybody abuse that, so to speak.
And how do you find working with Cleo and your other staff members? Has that been seamless? Has there been some sort of lessons learned in that kind of integration into a, you know, using remote services? And I'm assuming you have remote law clerks and paralegals, don't you?
Not yet, but I've actually am in the process of testing out or communicating with a couple. And I think that's supposed to start next week. So that's something I'm kind of trying to figure out. And is, you know, so I know using my practice management software, I can limit what they have access to in Cleo. Obviously, they're not going to be admins and whatnot. So there's certain, you know, restrictions you can put on each case file. You could say this, only these people are users or authorized. But I know with the POSH services, it also integrates. So my virtual receptionist integrates with Cleo Grow. So when he leads through, it will be identified as a lead. I can then, you know, that information can be automatically populated into a contact, and then we can send out, you know, intake forms when it comes to intake time and things like that. And so that's been helpful. Other services so far seem to be working seamlessly with Cleo and the limited access that they have on the CRM side.
May I offer one suggestion when you have virtual staff like that, law clerks and paralegals, is to have at least one weekly meeting by Zoom where everyone's involved, so that there's a human face for them. And also, you know, if they can hear how others are working and not working, and, you know, what needs to be done and not done, and how things are, you know, taken care of. I found that helped a lot, because when I first started, I had virtual clerks, but I required that they come to the office at first 2 days a week, 4 hours per session. And then it went down to 1 day a week once I was comfortable with their work. And then, of course, they do, you know, virtual work, which was fine by me, because, you know, I usually hire law students and, you know, they have differing schedules. And quite frankly, the time they spend coming in and out of the office could easily be used to either study, work for me, or sleep.
Right.
But I was getting complaints of a disconnect. Once COVID happened and it was just basically all virtual, I then started doing weekly meetings, and that seemed to sort of help resolve that issue and help, you know, address their concerns. Because, you know, I want everyone comfortable with what they're doing and working and whatnot. I usually do these, like, for instance, I usually do these interviews with a video on, just so that we can see each other. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, my video decided not to connect today, but at least audio is working. At least our audio is working. I probably should have just restarted the computer like I do before every interview. But, you know, I digress. All right. So I think we got to your... Well, we got basically Cleo, and we talked about POSH. Is there a third one that helps making, you know, working with virtual and remote services easier or seamless?
I mean, I didn't necessarily have access. So far, I haven't given anybody access, but so I try to back up documents and stuff to either Dropbox or EndPoint. I'm obviously, when I'm kind of, my goal is to kind of scale up a little bit and to get additional assistance. So that has allowed, you know, I can give people access to what I want them to use or to provide, or if there's a client, I can, you know, send a file through, you know, Dropbox with limited access to access, you know, Discovery or something like that. But that essentially allows them to have access to the things that I need them to have access to without me having to provide a whole file or a whole, you know, stack of documents of some sort. And so that's part of my conversations I'm going to have next week with some of the services that I'm looking into, some of the virtual, you know, paralegals and stuff, is to what extent do they need access to that, and what am I able to provide to them? And I'm always welcoming, you know, some of your suggestions here, I think have been, you know, excellent as far as things to kind of look out for or kind of consider when kind of giving some of that access to other entities.
Well, so here are just my two basic tips. It focuses completely on security. Number one is they have to have a password on their computer. And believe it or not, you need to remind them of this, because some don't.
Yeah, exactly. Shockingly.
And second is they need to use a VPN if they're going to be out and about, whether Starbucks, the airplane, the airport, you know, at a library, whatever. They need to be on a VPN, because, you know, it's not an issue of not trusting them. It's an issue of not trusting the prying eyes that are around them.
Exactly.
And those are, you know, that's part of like my first day introductions, like, you know, using a laptop. Yeah. Password protect it. Oh, yeah. And use a VPN. You know, these are two things that we don't quote unquote provide, You may want also to get some sort of password minder that allows you to have extra seats so that you can sync certain passwords across, you know, for instance, perhaps their logins, right, and also, you know, perhaps, you know, corp logins and legal research logins.
To just touch brief on that, mentioning legal research. So I use Fastcase as my legal provider. I taught Westlaw for years in LexisNexis, but I find Fastcase is kind of quickly gaining and the ease of use I've been impressed with. And so that's kind of what has kind of pushed me so far in the corner of Fastcase, which I think is great.
How is their shepherdization, or what is their shepherdization replacement?
I can't remember the name of they use, but I have had any issues of seeing what the relevance. So they, you could do kind of sort it with relevancy, like any other one you could do, but it'll have a cited. I think they reference it as cited, you know, cases or something like that. So you can see how it's been treated kind of going forward and what other courts have used or cited to that case. But I remember Fastcase early on as a potential alternative. Yeah. I think they've really established themselves now with, I would say they're probably, you know, the top three now with compared to Westlaw and LexisNexis.
Yeah, we interviewed Fastcase a couple of years ago. It's on our podcast feed, I'm sure. And they are coming up with some innovative stuff. Plus, they just got acquired or merged with VLEX.
Yep.
And a couple others. So they're clearly moving up in a competition for both Westlaw and Lexis. So Jason, let's go to question number three. What are your top three tips when communicating with clients through an LPM, text, or email?
So I've found it necessary, if not, you know, to probably under the rules of professional responsibility, but to make sure whatever you have or however you're communicating with them captures and preserves it. So text messages are kind of my least favorite. To me, that's not the most effective way to communicate with a client. That being said, a lot of potential clients and people out there are expecting the ability to communicate through text. So the practice management software, like I said, I use Clio. They allow us, there's a texting function and it actually saves it
to
the history of it. Google Voice also has that, but you know, obviously it preserves it. What you do with it at the end of the day, I guess, depends. But so making sure you can keep a copy of it because you need a copy of what your communications with the client. But second, I would say, you know, obviously being clear, I'm clear up front with how I expect to communicate with them and how they can expect to communicate with me. And so in emergencies, they can they can text whatever they need, you know, if they need to text, but making sure that somewhere in the text chain as well is maybe I try to keep it as professional as possible when it comes to identifying. So a potential case number versus, you know, party names, family law, obviously a lot of stuff's the public information, but that way I can always keep a track of it and kind of coordinate it. But so, I mean, it's the third one would be kind of a little opposite of some of my other two tips, but just kind of learning to how it can be used in your practice. And so it's something that some of my last law firms, they kind of had like a no texting policy whatsoever, but that's not the way things have evolved over time, you know, especially now everybody expects a text. And in fact, scheduling and things like that, a lot of that can happen through the text messaging, like I said, through Clio. But I've been using it to get Google reviews, and I found that probably up to about 100% Google review rating or somebody will more likely to click on a Google review or leave one if I send that request through a text. And so I think part of it's embracing it and using it, but just being mindful of how often you're doing it. And if you are doing it, making sure you can actually preserve it, whether it's, you know, a hard copy or a physical copy saved in the file.
So wait, I want to make sure I heard you clearly. You're finding that you're getting more requests for Google review if you text versus, say, an email?
Yep. I would say it's almost always it's 70-80% response rate. So it's versus if I send an email, I probably less than a 50% chance.
Okay. That's interesting to know. I'll have to keep that in mind. I personally, I've been trying to stay away from texting. I don't think I've really had that much of a problem, with the exception of maybe one or two that, you know, kind of get around it, so to speak. But no, it's definitely something to keep in mind and something, you know, I just like to keep the different directions of information requests coming a little more streamlined. That's why I like just phone and email right now. But then again, perhaps I'm just old school.
And it does allow like a quick reminder. So a lot of my cases, it's automatically a function of Clio, as long as I put it in there and click the box, but they'll be reminded of like a court event coming up. There's say there's a status conference, it texts a reminder, which I think is great.
Which I love about Calendly because it gives them reminders of, hey, you have an appointment coming up. Hey, make sure you're ready. Hey, you know, don't forget. And also, of course, they put the appointment in their calendar too, which, you know, helps a lot too.
Yeah, name of the game, I guess.
Well, Jason, I want to thank you for being here. Please tell us where people can find you.
Yep. So find me at Dirigo-Divorce. That's Dirigo-Divorce.com. It's a family law firm in Maine. And hopefully looking to expand shortly into New Hampshire as well. And feel free to reach out. I'm also on LinkedIn, and feel free to connect that way as well.
And wait, I have to ask, you mentioned, we had talked off mic about the name of the firm came from.
Yep. So the state motto for Maine is Deer Ago, and it does, they have a little star, which could reference the North Star, but it's kind of a guide. So it's Latin for I guide or to direct. And so the divorce process is fraught with, you know, questions and concerns and whatnot. And my whole idea was to, somebody needs a guide through that divorce process. And so Deer Ago Divorce is kind of how that name kind of came into existence.
Cool. Well, again, thank you for being here and have a great day. And I hope to see you at the ABA Tech Show 2024.
Awesome, Michael. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast. Our next episode will be posted in about 2 weeks. If you have any ideas about a future episode, please contact me at MichaelDJ@thetechsavvylawyer.page. Have a great day and happy lawyering.